It's a very special schus to have been invited by Frank Buchowitz of the OU to come to speak to all of you on the very, very important topic of tefillah as part of the tefillah initiative, which is really nationally and internationally taking place. I would like to begin by telling you a very beautiful story. I remember when I was in high school in Tur Vadas, there was a fellow, a Hasidic fellow, his name was Shmuel Rubinstein. He was literally the first one to write a pamphlet with pictures about mitzvahs. The first pamphlet that he wrote was about Hilchos Tefillin, and it had the pictures of the Batim and the Ritzuos, the different types of Tefillin, Sfar and Ashkenaz and Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam. And I remember he came and everybody in the Beis Medrash was enamored with what he was doing. Many, many years later, I heard a remarkable story. I heard a story about what happened to him when he was a little boy. When he was 10 years old, he was living in the Bronx, and Nebuch, he got rheumatic fever. Rheumatic fever is something that affects the nervous system, that affects the heart. He was already, unfortunately, a yosam. His father had passed away. So he was living with his mother, and every day he would travel from the Bronx to Tur Vadas, which was a long trip, over an hour. But when he got that illness, the doctor said to him and to his mother that he cannot take this trip every day from the Bronx and schlep all the way down to Brooklyn and Tur Vadas because it'll just kill him. It's too much for his heart. Now this was in the beginning of the 1950s. This was before there were so many, many yeshivas. And the doctor said, listen, I'm telling you, I don't know the different schools, but I think you should send him to public school, because obviously there are public schools in the Bronx. Well, this lady was not going to send her child to a public school. The only school that made sense for her was a school that was starting by the Baba of a Rebbe. The Baba of a Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Halberstam, who was beloved by everyone, had just come a couple years before from Europe, and he started a small yeshiva in Manhattan. Now this lady was not a Hasidic lady, but certainly a Hasidic school was better than a public school. So she decided she's going to send her child to the Baba of a school. He became very close to the Rebbe. The Rebbe realized this is a yosam. He became like a surrogate father to this child. And so when this boy became bar mitzvah, he wanted to be exactly like the Rebbe. He started wearing a gartel, he wore an upturned hat, and he wanted to be exactly like the Rebbe. So the first sukkah after his bar mitzvah, his mother got him his own lulavan esrig. She was nebuch an almana, she couldn't afford much. She got him the best that she could get. But this little boy knew that the Rebbe's lulav and esrog surely was going to be the most beautiful. And so he was thinking one night, Chol HaMoed Sukkos, maybe he should go the next day, there's no school, Chol HaMoed, but maybe he'll go to the Rebbe and he'll use the Rebbe's lulav and esrog. After all, surely the Rebbe had a beautiful one. But then he was thinking, what if the Rebbe lets me use this esrog and I drop it? I mean, that'll be the end. Right? So maybe I shouldn't even bother going altogether. No, he decided, you know what? It's a big schus. I'll go. So he's nervous. He doesn't know whether to ask the Rebbe, not to ask the Rebbe, but he figures the mitzvah hopefully will protect him. So he comes to the Rebbe's house in Manhattan, and the Rebbe says to him, Shmuel, my kid, what are you doing here? There's no school today. He says, no, Rebbe, I would like to use the Rebbe's lulav and esrog. He said, Shmuel, my kid, didn't you make a bracha on your own lulav and esrog today? He said, yeah, of course I did. But you know, my mother is very poor. She probably got me one that, you know, it's kosher, but it's probably not as good as what the Rebbe has. So if the Rebbe doesn't mind, I would like to use the Rebbe's lulav and esrog just to be yaitzeh to the mitzvah in the most beautiful way. So the Rebbe knew this little kid is a tzaddik, a heilige child. He said, okay, my Shmuel, I'll get it for you. And the Rebbe had the esrog in a very beautiful silver box, and he had it near his desk, and he goes and he brings it to Shmuel, and he takes out the silver box with the hay, or whatever they call it, the flax it's called, and he gives it, he gives the little boy the lulav. And you know how you do it, you take the esrog upside down so that when you make a bracha you turn it over. So then you get to the mitzvah that way. Now this kid was trembling. He was so nervous. And of course, you know what happens. If you're afraid that something is going to happen and you're so nervous, well, you can expect the worst happens. And as he's turning over, he's holding the lulav in his right hand, and as he's turning over the esrog, the poor kid fumbles the esrog, and it falls to the floor, and it starts rolling to the wall. And the kid was hoping that the earth will open up like by Kairach, he'll fall in, and it'll all be over, finished. The worst that could have happened, happened. He dropped the Rebbe's esrog. The Rebbe doesn't say anything. The Rebbe walks over to the wall, and he picks up the esrog, and he sees the pittim is intact. And he says, Shmuel, look. Look at this. The esrog is so strong, the pittim didn't break. He said, this is a simon from heaven to you. Hashem has shown you something very special. We know, he says, that the four species, the arba minim, are representative of different parts of the body. The lulav is the spine, the hadassim are the eyes, the arovas are the mouth, the esrog is the heart. You have rheumatic fever, but this is a simon from Shemayim. Your heart is going to be strong. So something that was a nightmare just a few moments ago was the biggest bracha. The Rebbe turned around the whole incident and made it a bracha for him. And Shmuel Rubinstein never told this story to anyone. Many, many years later, he was already married with children, and he was sitting in his sukkah. His children was there, his wife was there, and he said to his children and to his wife, he said, I want to tell you a story that I never told you before. He said, I'm telling you this story because today is the anniversary of this story on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And he tells him the whole story with the lulav and the esrog and how he dropped it and the bracha that he got. And he said, I'm telling you this story because today is 32 years since that story happened. And lev, the word lev, heart, is begamatria 32. And 3 weeks later he died. And during the shiva, that's when they called me. And they said, now we understand what the Rebbe's bracha was. The Rebbe's bracha was that his heart would be strong. His heart would be strong lev for 32 years. And maybe deep down, Rav Shmuel Rubinstein understood that. And that's why he wanted to tell them the story before he passed away from the world. We are going to learn today how to strengthen our hearts. Hopefully longer than 32 years. You know what the Gemara tells us in Tainus? We're supposed to serve Hashem with our hearts. What is the avoida? What is the service of the heart? That's tefillah. And Rashi in Sanhedrin, Kufav Amadbeis, tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu libo boy. Hashem wants heart. What does that mean? The Zohar uses this expression, Rachmana libo boy. That's what Rashi tells us. And the Zohar tells us the same thing. Rachmana libo boy, the Eibishter vil heart. What does it mean that Hashem wants our heart? Hashem wants to see how we daven. That's the avodah shebelev. And so that when we talk about la'ovdei b'chol avchem, how do we get closer to Hashem? By improving our tefillah. I'm sure many of you were here, I should say were there, at Madison Square Garden when they had the Siyum HaShas, the first Siyum HaShas. And if you remember, 20,000 strong were there that night. And there were two things that happened that night that I will never forget if I live to be 160. The first thing was the Ma'ariv, if you remember. Rav Moshe Shera had that genius idea. You know, you come Motzei Shabbos into a shul, there's 500 people, so there's 20 minyanim. But on the scoreboard, right, where the Knicks and Rangers usually have all their goals and all the points that they score, there was a sign, only one united minyan. And they got the right guy to daven, if you remember that night, Rav Leizer Ginsburg. And he davened Ma'ariv, as only he can daven Ma'ariv. And I'm telling you, when 20,000 men, women, and children were saying Shema Yisrael, I was crying like you cried by Nila. It was worth the whole night just for that Shema Yisrael of 20,000. That's when I understood what the Baal HaGadol tells us. If Hashem would have taken us to Har Sinai, didn't give us the Torah, it would have been enough. What do you mean it would have been enough? Wasn't the whole purpose of coming to Har Sinai to learn the Torah? To receive the Torah? No, but you got 20,000 yin v'achdus davening together. That's worth the whole night itself. That's what the Baal HaGadol is telling us. But there was a second thing. A statement that Rav El Yisrei, the Rosh Hashiva of Philadelphia, who recently passed away, a comment that he made that is so striking. You know what he said? He said, when you're learning Torah, no matter what you learn, whether it's Chumash, Tanakh, Gemara, Mishnayos, Halacha, whatever it is, Hashem is talking to you. When you davening, you're talking to Hashem. So when you're learning, Hashem is talking to you. He's telling you what He wants from you. When we're davening, we're telling Hashem what we want from Him. And if that's the case, why is it we have that opportunity 3 times a day, 4 times on Shabbos? That's so many times. Our bodies are here, but our minds are someplace else. And I think that one of the answers is because if you daven 3 times a day, throughout the year, you daven 1,000 times a year. I don't care what you do 1,000 times a year. After a while, you're going to lose your interest. Because you're doing it every day. And soon it becomes just a habit. And you're just saying the words, and your body is here, and your mind is someplace else. As a matter of fact, the Gemara tells us, and it's very interesting to me, because it's in Daf Lamed Beis, of all places. Daf Lamed Beis, the Gemara tells us, Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis, and Brochas, Arboa, Tzrich, and Chizuk. 4 things need constant work, constant encouragement, constant strengthening. And one of them is Tefillah. Why? Because we do it so often. And if you do it so often, you got to make a conscious effort to make sure that it should be perfect. So how are we going to improve it? I'll tell you a great story. You know, the Satmar Rebbe had a great sense of humor. Now I want to tell you a great joke that he said that has nothing to do with the speech, but it is such a great joke that I can't resist. The Satmar Rebbe was once collecting money for his maestas. So somebody gave him $47. So the Rebbe said, what's $47? He said, Rebbe, it's begamatria, your name, Yo-Yo, Yud, Vav, Aleph, Lamed, it's begamatria, 47. So the Rebbe says to him in Yiddish, in the Heinz Lake, Mechlif, and Yoilish. In the old country, they called him Yoilish. You can be sure that Satmar Chosid had to pay an extra $310 for that Yud and that Shin. So the Rebbe, besides his genius, was a very easy person. So he was once at a wedding. So somebody said to him, Rebbe, do you mind if I imitate you? So the Rebbe said, no, I don't mind. So the guy got up, and he started, he out of his bag of tricks, he took a talus, wherever he got it from, and he put it over his head, and he started saying the tefillah exactly as the Rebbe said it, with his high-pitched voice and the same accent, and everyone was hysterical, except the Rebbe. The Rebbe was watching this guy with awe. His mouth was open, and suddenly he begins crying. And, you know, the Talmud, in the beginning, you know, he was watching everyone's reaction. So he was into his shtick. But all of a sudden he caught the Rebbe's eye, and he sees the Rebbe is crying. So he finishes very quickly, and he says, goes over, he's Rebbe, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. He says, no, it's not you. So he says, the Rebbe, why were you crying? Listen to what the Rebbe said. Listen to this genius remark. He said, I saw how you were imitating me. You were imitating me so perfect, so exact, that it occurred to me sometimes when I'm davening, I'm only imitating myself. You know what that means? That means that sometimes we come to shul and we have the recession on our minds, as Frank was talking about. Or like, when are the Mets finally going to win? Or marriage problems, children problems, shidduchim problems, there's a lot of things going on. You don't have a very close friend. Please don't tell him I told you this. But he's one of my closest friends, Yaakov Salman. You can tell him I called him a close friend, but don't tell him what I said. You know, he was talking to his mother, who recently passed away. But before she passed away, she once said to him, she said, Yaakov, oh, I don't believe it. His brother walked in this second. I don't believe it. They're going to think we planned this, is he? I'm telling you, it's crazy. It's unbelievable. Izzy Solomon. Okay, so now it's not to be believed. This was not planned. I can't believe this. So Yaakov Solomon is talking to his mother, right? She's over 90, a very perceptive woman. And she said to him, Yaakov, you're always running around. You must be exhausted. He said, I am exhausted. She said, so when do you get time to think? At least me, when I get into bed, you know, so I it takes me 20 minutes to fall asleep so I can think. But when do you think? He says, Mom, there's always Shimon Esrei. It's a sad joke, but it's true. Some of the best ideas come up through Shimon Esrei. But it's really wrong. Shimon Esrei is not a time to think about everything. So many times, like the Satna Rebbe, you know, we have so much on our minds that you can't just stand around doing nothing. So you go through the motions. You're only imitating yourself. So if the great Rebbe could be Maida, that he's only imitating himself, what in the world should we say about ourselves? Sometimes we're only going through the motions. So how are we going to improve? So I'm going to tell you now two ways. Two ways how to improve and make sure that our tefillahs are more effective before we even get to shul. And then we're going to talk about how to improve once we get to the shul. It's a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Tainus, Chof Hei on the base. The Gemara tells us that there was a time when there was no rain in Eretz Yisrael. And they went to Rabbi Lezer, and they asked Rabbi Lezer, you got a daven for us, because if there's no rain, the crops won't grow and we're finished. He davened, and it didn't help. They went to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva davened, and it helped. Started raining. For a free market book, I'm selling my books afterwards, but outside, for a free soft cover book, who knows what tefillah did Rabbi Akiva make up that day that they got the rain? Does anybody know? Who said that? You're right, soft cover coming up. Okay? He's right, Avinu Malkeinu. Very good. You can buy another three editions, but the one scooped the one. But anyway, Avinu Malkeinu, he's right. So people started saying, oh, Rabbi Akiva is a bigger tzaddik than Rabbi Lezer. You see that Rabbi Lezer davened and it didn't rain, and Rabbi Akiva davened and it did rain. Zok the Gemara that Abasko came from Shemayim. Listen to this. And the Basco says, Loi Mimeshes that God was there. The reason that Rabbi Akiva was answered not because he's greater than Rabbi Elazar, Elo Shezem Mavir Al Midoiso. Rabbi Akiva had a midah. Rabbi Akiva had a characteristic that people who have this characteristic, they get their prayers answered. You know what it is? They can look away when someone hurts them. Mavir Al Midoiso, they're ready to look away. They're not out there to get even. Now, if somebody took money from you, you have every right to get the money back. We're not talking about that. You can all go after Madoff, every single one of you. But I'm talking about other things. I'm talking when somebody says something nasty about your family, or somebody says something about you, or somebody says something that's painful, or embarrasses you, and you look away, Hashem says, you know, that person is willing to look away, I'll look away. None of us are perfect. We all have things that we've done that we would rather Hashem look away from. But we're asking Hashem for all the good things, and sometimes we may not have this chosen because we did certain things. We want Hashem to look away. You become that person who's ma'avir al midaisav. That's what the Gemara says. That's how you get your tefillah answered. So before we walk into shul, we have to develop this midah that we're not always going to get even with someone. Somebody does something painful, says something about our child, our spouse, our professional, whatever. And it's embarrassing, and you want to lash out, and you control yourself, Hashem will also look away. That's the first thing. You know what the second thing is? A remarkable thing. The Chofetz Chaim tells us that every single word of Torah that you learn, and every single word of tefillah that you daven, an angel is created, and the malach takes these words up to Shemayim. So the Chofetz Chaim says, imagine you want to build a table, but you don't have such good tools. You have a hammer without a handle. You have a saw without teeth. So you slap together a table, and you think, that's a table. But a maven understands, that's not a table. This is not a chair. He just slapped it together. He didn't have the right tools. So a maven will understand that you need the right tools to be able to build the right items. In order for us to build malachim that are going to take our words of tefillah up to Shemayim, we have to be sure that our tool is perfect. Our tool is our mouth. So if a person tells a dirty joke, or if a person curses when he's angry, or a person says something to a spouse or to a child, his own child, that's painful. He has used his mouth in a terrible way. And so therefore, it's impossible that his mouth should build a perfect malach. How in the world are you going to get your tefillahs answered? You're stuck before you even open up the siddur. If a person has a crippled tool, he cannot only build crippled malachim. So of course the malachim aren't going to make it up there with the tefillahs. So before we even open up the siddur, we have to make sure that we're not saying things that are painful about others. We're not talking lashon hara about others. We're not breaking up shiduchim. When somebody asks a question and you say, I don't see it. Who asked you? If you don't see it, be quiet. Listen, we know what your shidduch looks like, right? So? Well, we know these things happen. Don't break up shiduchim if you don't have to. Unless Chas V'Shalom, you know there's something seriously wrong. But otherwise, you don't talk like that. You don't hurt people. And like this, when your mouth is a perfect mouth, then you can walk into a shul. Then there's a chance that the tefillahs will be answered. So we have two things that we have to worry about before we even open up the door to the shul. One, we have to become a maver al mizaytos. And two, you have to make sure that your mouth is a perfect tool to build those heiligim malachim that are going to take our words to Shemayim. Listen to this. I'm going to tell you now a Gemara and a story that you will never forget. And this story, literally without exaggeration, has changed hundreds, if not thousands, of people. But let me tell you the Gemara. The Gemara says, La'ilam yashkim adam lebeis ha-knesset. A person should come to shul kedeisha yiske ve'yimne im asara rishayim. You should be among the first 10. Sha'afilu me'a ba'achrav. Even if 100 people come after you to shul, you get the reward of everybody davening with a minion. They get a reward for davening with a minion, but you're the one who brought the minion. You're the one who brought the Shina. Because when there are 10 people that come together to daven, no matter where they come to daven, the Shina is there. Even in the Rice Field Bleachers in Metz Neshe Stadium, Olam Shalom. Now City Field, I don't know if they have it there. But Neshe Stadium in the 7th inning, it used to be, you go around to the Rice Field, on the first day, you'll have a minion from Iron. Hashem comes there. You'd be surprised. Once there are 10 people there, Hashem, there's a level of Shechina that's there. So the first 10 people brought the Shechina, they get the reward for everybody that comes to shul, and that's davening. So now, this story happened to a fellow who told the fellow who told it to me, and then I happened to meet the fellow himself. He said, whatever you do, don't tell people what city it's in, and don't tell people my profession, because I don't want anybody to know who I am. And when I finally met him, I met him once in the summer in a hotel, Shabbos. And he said, Rabbi Kron, I'm the guy you're talking about. I'm the one who the story happened. I literally embraced him and I kissed him. I said, you cannot imagine how many people have changed because of you. So listen to a great story that happened in a furniture store in Milwaukee. It didn't happen in a furniture store. It didn't happen in Milwaukee. But listen to a great story about a furniture store in Milwaukee. Listen to this. This guy is in his 20s. He comes into work at 9 o'clock. By 9:40, he thinks he smells smoke. He thinks he smells fire. He runs down to the basement, and sure enough, the whole basement is on fire. How he tries to put it out with a fire extinguisher, he can't put it out, the fire is too big. By the time he comes running back upstairs to call the fire department, the fire has come through the slats. It's on the curtains, on the tables, on the chairs. The fire is all over the place. And he's screaming to the fire department. He's begging them to come to save his store. He told me that by the time they came, it was too late. The store was gutted. It took them more than 9 months to put the store together again. The only thing they were able to do was they were able to hose down the store next to them. Next to him, that store was saved. A few days after the fire, he comes to shul. And he says to a friend of mine who first told me the story. He said, you know what happened to me a couple days before the fire? I come to shul, and a guy comes over to me and he says, you know, every day you come to shul, but every day you come late. Why do you come late every single day? So I said to him, what's the difference? At the end I come. He said, then God showed me. The fire department. At the end they also came. See, he made that crack. What's the difference? At the end I come. Hashem said, I'll show you something. At the end the fire department came. At the end I come is not good enough. If a person walks in by Ashrei, or if a person even walks in by Hodu in the morning, who are you kidding? You're skipping words. And I hate to use the pun, but I've heard it so many times. Karbonis, a sacrifice, if you walk in late. Because you're not saying that. In my humble opinion, I cannot understand how any thinking Jew cannot say Karbon Chatos every day. Who are we kidding? Don't we do Averis? That we're not sure? That we did the Shoygei? Don't we do Averis? That we're not sure if we did them or not? Also? Well, how can anybody drive the streets, drive in the highways, and watch anything that we're watching or read anything that we're reading and not come up with an impure thought that a person doesn't have to bring a carbon oil? Who are we kidding? So how can a yid, the thinking yid, not once a day say carbon oil, carbon kabbas, carbon asham? But if you walk in late, it's impossible. Unless you're davening in the yeshiva where they're davening very slowly. Not the balabatas reading, everyone's going to work. So of course they're flying through the davening. So when you go to ball game, you want to be there when they fill out the first pitch, right? You come 20 minutes early. So why shouldn't you come 20 minutes early so when you hear how they fill out the first bracha? 7 o'clock davening doesn't mean that you're moseying at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock davening means you got to be here 10 to 7. So you can put on your towels and your swim like a mensch and then start davening. So many times, you know, people tell me 7:30 is davening. I come at 7:30, they're starting hoidu at 7:30. If they're starting hoidu and that's when people are walking in, it's impossible. Who are we kidding? At the end, I come is not good enough. From this holy initiative, one of the takonas we have to make in our lives, is that we're going to start coming on time to davening. 7 o'clock is davening, you're there 10 to 7. Just like you go to a ball game. You want to be there on time? Same thing. Davening should be no less. We have to be there on time. Here's the second thing. I hope nobody minds. And if they mind, so I won't come back next year. Bracha Tzamach Beis HaMeveis. La Yikonis Adam Lahar Abayis. A person is not allowed to come to the Har Abayis, to the mountain where the Beis HaMikdash is. In those days the pants didn't have pockets, so they had a money belt. So you were not allowed to come up near the Beis HaMikdash wearing a money belt, because otherwise it looks like you're coming to do business. So there's a dress code when you come to shul. In my humble opinion, any person that's over 20, I'm not talking about teenagers, should not be coming to daven mincha, ma'ariv, shacharis in the middle of the week with sneakers. This is not your gym. There's a dress code. And as Frank mentioned before, no one can answer a cell phone in shul. It's not your office. I've seen guys texting. I saw guy bothered for the office and he's texting. Who's he texting? God? He thinks nobody sees someone. I was standing next to him. I thought somebody got rid. What kind of business is that? If you go to the White House, I'm not saying when Clinton was there, but you know, Obama, they're a normal president. You don't dress like a mensch, right? In my humble opinion, Shabbos afternoon by mincha. Where did that mincha become casual mincha? If you wear a tie Friday night to Shabbos morning, you should wear a tie Shabbos by mincha. Where did this casual mincha come into being? If you're in a chassid or an Israeli who never wears a tie, fine, so you don't wear a tie ever. You don't wear Friday night, you don't wear Shabbos morning either. But if you're wearing a tie Friday night or Shabbos morning, it's Shabbos on mincha. Of course you should wear a tie. You know, in Young Israel, by Rabbi Lehrfeld, in North Miami, they have a great sign. Unless you're expecting a call from God, please shut your beeper. Really, nobody should have their phones or beepers on, even on vibrate. How did we manage 15 years ago? Everybody managed, right? So you manage, unless you're an atzolah, you're a doctor, it's a different story. But otherwise, for those 25 minutes, what do you think is going to happen? A person has to be able to control ourselves. So there's a dress code. So now we're in shul already. Right? We've worked on Magen Avraham Yitzchak. We've worked on making our mouth perfect. We're going to come on time. I'm going to dress like a mensch when it comes to shul. I'm not saying you have to wear a suit and a tie every day. That's not realistic. But certainly not sneakers, as we said. Here's something that's so interesting. And I'm telling you, this changes the way you daven. I know it has changed it for me. The Shulchan Aruch Kodesh tells us, Sheyechadesh divrei tachnunim v'shailes v'koshes v'ktaz brochot ha'tfilah mo'e v'kulam. add to the Shemayin Esrei. You're allowed to talk in English. You don't skip any of the Hebrew words, but in every bracha, the Shema says, add something. And Rav Yudah Chassid writes in Simon Kuf Nun Ches, Ukeshet Dispawel, when you daven, Toysim, Alko Bracha, U Bracha Me'in Yonel, Lister Achecha. Daven for what you need. In Baruch Aleinu, which is a bracha panasa, don't we all need panasa today? Daven to Hashem, before, at the end of the bracha, the Rabbanim will tell you where you can put it in. If you take a look at the Oscar Siddurim and all the Siddurim before, Rafa'enu, the Kike Roife, Nemav Rachmanata, you can add that Yerotzai and talk in English. And Shema Galeni can talk about anything before Kiyatah Shemaya Tefillah. Whatever is on your mind, the shira for your child, the marriage problem that you're having, the financial problem. We all have problems. Nobody gets away scot-free. We're all in gullus. Everybody's got challenges. Everybody's got issues. Talk to Hashem. And when you talk, that's a different Shemayin Esrei. You're not worried about when you finish, or when the other guy's finished ahead of you or behind you. Who cares? You're having a dialogue with Hashem. It's a different type of Shemayin Esrei. And that's what the Shema is telling you, you should add. Rabbi Yehuda Chassid is telling us you should add. We're talking obviously in the weekday Shemayin Esrei. And then the second thing, it's an incredible thing. Did it ever occur to anyone that the entire tefillah that we daven is Lashon Rabin? Rifa'enu, heal us. Slach lanu, forgive us. Baruch Aleinu, bless us. Shema Kaleinu, listen to us. Hashiveinu, return to us. We're davening Lashon Rabin, or Memein Tzach Aleinu, we're only thinking about ourselves. So I'll tell you another great story that happened with me. I'm no Rebbe, obviously. I was on to that bris in Merrick, Long Island. Not a frum family at all. I finished the bris. I'm cleaning up in the kitchen. I see a woman standing there. She's crying. I don't know what possessed me to go over to her. But you see, she's not crying from joy. I say, I see that you're upset. Is there anything that I can do for you? She says, Rabbi, I don't want to talk about it. I said, listen, the fact that you talk about it, you never know where you could get some encouragement. And besides the mere fact that you talk it out is helpful. She says, okay, Rabbi, I'll tell you. This is the third time you're in this house. This is the third baby that my best friend has. What does God want from me? Why don't I have any children? And she bursts into tears. What do I know why God didn't give her children? But I opened my mouth, right? I said something to her, so I had to answer. So I waited till she composed herself, and I said, I want to tell you something. And I want you to listen to what I'm telling you very carefully. Because the advice I'm giving you is not the advice that I made up. It's the advice of the great rabbis of the Talmud. I couldn't even use the word Gemara. She wouldn't know what a Gemara was. I said to her, the Talmud teaches. This involves a Kama Tzadik Beis Amud Aleph. Kol HaMavakesh Rachamim Al Chaveiroi. Anybody who davens for his friend, V'hu Tzarek La'isodava, you need that thing? You daven for somebody else? Nanat Chila, you're going to be answered first. I said, it's not my business what your problem is. Whether it's you or your husband, I don't want you to tell me. But you and your doctor know. Go to your doctor today. Find somebody else who has that problem. Whether it's your problem or your husband, and daven for that person. And I'm telling you, God's going to answer you first. I took her name, her mother's name, I told her to give tzedakah, and I forgot about the story. A year later, a lady calls me up. She says, Rabbi Krohn, do you remember who I am? I said, listen, thank God I see people every day. She says, Rabbi, I'm that lady, Mrs. Bader in Merrick, Long Island. Do you remember you spoke to me in the kitchen? Of course, now I remember. I said, where are you calling? What are you calling for? She says, Rabbi, I'm calling from North Shore Hospital. I want you to know from that day on, I prayed for a friend of mine who had the same problem that I had. And today I had a boy. And I said to her, I can't believe it, you made my day. And she said to me, words I'll never forget. She said, Rabbi, I may have made your day, but you made my life. And that bris and the baby that I did for her 2 years later were from the greatest that I ever did. Every one of us has problems. But no matter what problem you have, there are people out there in Klal Yisrael who have the same problem. Find what they have. Find someone else and daven for them, and you're going to be answered first. And people say, oh, it's not sincere. You only daven for somebody else, you really mean yourself. And you know what the answer is? The answer is the Gemara tells us, la'ayla. You should always learn Shalai Lishma first. Because when you learn Shalai Lishma for the altruistic reason, you don't learn for the true reason. But then, Then you're going to be able to learn Lishma. And when you daven for other people and you see that you're answered, oh, you're going to become a different person of davening. Then you're going to see it works. Then you're going to start davening for others, even when you don't need it. That's what tefillah is. That's why tefillah is the connection, not only to Hashem, but to each other. Because we all know people with shirek lecha problems. In Rifa'ina we should be davening. Don't daven for 10 people, you'll stop. It's too much after 10 days. We won't be able to do it. It's impossible. Two people in Rifa'ina. Two people in Baruch Aleinu that need parnasa. Two people that need Shaduchim and Shmak Aleinu. In every part of Shemoneh Esrei, you figure out two or three people. And that's what I do. I have on my own card of people that I daven for. Not 20, it's too much. But then you begin to make a connection. Then you feel that you're part of Klal Yisrael. And hopefully there are people out there that are davening for you as well. But that's how you improve your tefillah. By making it personal and by davening for other people. You know what's another tremendous thing that we can do? And that is, I believe that part of the tefillah initiative is that we should have a say there in learning Perush HaTefillah. Now somebody might say, well, that's for kids in the grade school. But I'm telling you, the reason that most of us daven and our bodies are here, our minds are someplace else, because we don't know what in the world we're talking about. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands of how many people know what the word Ritzei V'Hachal Yitzeinu means. Even Oxford doesn't know. They got four different answers on what V'Hachal Yitzeinu means. Take a look at it, you'll see. What in the world does that mean? What can you be thinking about when you're saying those words? You can't be thinking of the meaning. You don't know what you're talking about. So part of the Tefillah initiative around the country and around the world is that Rabbanim and Askanim, and we have so many Talmidei Chachamim here tonight. Get involved. Have a Seder once a week in Perush HaTefillah. Start the Shemoneh Esrei. Start in Baruch Sha'amah, and I'll tell you a story of Baruch Sha'amah. You underline it tonight, you will never, ever say Baruch Sha'amah the same after this story. Listen to this. I have it underlined in my sitter. The Sgeleta Rebbe, the Alta Sgeleta Rebbe, when he was in Romania, he had so many kids in his house. Him and his wife, over 400 young men and women made their way through his house. He was protecting them from going to the army because he knew very well that if they end up in the army, they'll end up not being from. And he harbored them. It was illegal, but he wanted to save their religious lives. So one day somebody snitched on him and he was taken to jail, solitary confinement. Now the Alta Sgeleta Rebbe was such a tzaddik. His tefillah was so long every day. They say it took more than a half hour to daven Shemoneh Esrei. Just Shemoneh Esrei itself. So he was put in solitary confinement. They took away his glasses. They took away his yarmulke. And they dropped him in a place where he thought he would be there forever. So, now that he's in solitary confinement, he could certainly daven slow, right? Because nobody's taking him out of there. So he begins davening. He takes his jacket. He puts it over his head. So he has a head covering. And he's davening. And he would tell this story every single year he came to Baruch Sha'amah. He comes to Baruch Sha'amah. And he's looking and he's concentrating on the words. Baruch Sha'amah v'hoya olam. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam said that there should be a world and there was a world. Merachem ala haaretz, merachem ala briyah, mishalem sechadrev l'reya. Hashem is doing all the wonderful things. The whole Baruch Sha'amah is positive. And then all of a sudden he says the words. Baruch Goy is there, umakayim. They should make the gzeira. A gzeira is a decree, a terrible decree. Umakayim, and he fulfills the gzeira. That's terrible. Hashem makes a decree, a terrible decree of Zerah, and he fills it? And he brings it to fruition? That's terrible. How does that fit into the mantra of Baruch Sha'amah? The whole Baruch Sha'amah is positive, not negative. And the Rebbe is so angry at himself that he never thought of this question, that he says, Hashem, I don't want you to take me out of here until I figure this out. How could I not have thought of this question? I'm badly slow every day. Such an obvious question. And he says it over and over, Baruch Gleiser of Makayin. What does it mean? And listen to this shot that he comes up with. You will not believe. Baruch Gleiser. Hashem makes a gzeira. Makayin. You know what Kayim means? Not only fulfill. Kayim means to exist, to have a kiyum. When Hashem gives a gzeir, Rahman al-Islam, to someone, He gives them the capacity and the power to live through and exist through that difficult time. Baruch Goy, that Hashem is blessed, because even when He makes a gzeira for Kayim, He gives you the courage and the strength to exist. And so many of us have gone through difficult times in life, and we thought it's over, we can't exist, if that could happen, we're finished. But somehow we made it through. Because the Eivishter, the Rabbeinu Shlomo, who's the Abba Rachamim, who for every reason had to make that Zera, Baruch Goyze Umakayim, He gave us that koyach to exist through it. And when you say that and you underline it, and a person's out of a job, or the daughter is getting older and doesn't have the shidduch, you say those words, Hashem, you're making a zera, but I know you gave me the strength and I'm going to be able to live through this. I'm going to be able to get through this because you're going to pull me through. Because that's the guarantee of what Chazal wrote in the Baruch Sha'alma. And of course the Rebbe, a couple days later, he was released, and every year on the anniversary of the day that he was released, he would tell over this story of Rav Geisha Makai. But that happens only when you're thinking about the words, when you're learning the meaning of the words. So part of this holy OU initiative is not only to come on time, but to learn the words of the tefillah. Because that's really how we're going to make the connection to Hashem and to each other. I think that there's another aspect of tefillah that we have to begin concentrating on. And that is the idea of moed, saying thank you. You know, especially in difficult times, and we're all going through difficult times, we tend to forget how good Hashem is to us and how many wonderful things that we have. Look at this wonderful community. How many communities are there in the world like Teaneck, New Jersey? Did you ever stop and say, thank you, Hashem? I have such a wonderful roof like Rabbi Krasinski. Thank you, Hashem, that I have so many shuls in Teaneck that I could choose from. I could daven by Rabbi Neuberger. I could daven. I got Joey Bodner in my shul. Isn't that something to thank Hashem for? Right? Those of you who know Joey? Anybody who's got children or grandchildren, if you have a job, you ever stop and say, thank you, Hashem, I have a job. I have a car. I have a house. I have a spouse. We have to begin saying moedah with a little bit more feeling. And that's how you make a connection to Hashem. You know, David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, Pirschuli Sharei Tzedek, Avoy Vam Oideka, open up for me the gates of righteousness. The gates of the Beis Medrash, the gates of the Beis HaKnesses. Avoy Vam Oideka, I'm going to say thank you. One of my favorite stories is about this cute little kid who comes into a store with his mother and the food store, and the guy behind the counter gives a little boy, cute little kid, gives him a banana. So the mother says, what two words do you say to the nice man behind the counter? Well, the boy says, peel it. Of course, the kid never heard thank you in his life. Imagine, we're all fathers, right? Baruch Hashem, mothers, grandfathers, grandmothers, hopefully. And you give a child a toy. And you give him a bike. He says, yeah, it's 80, but the kid down the block's got a 10-speed bike. It's only a 5-speed bike. What do you want to do with that kid? What do you want to do with the bike? Right, but what if the kid says, Daddy, wow, thank you so much. I know it's so hard for you. And you brought me such a beautiful gift. What do you want to do? You want to kiss that child and give him another gift? Hashem is the same way. Hashem is our Father in heaven. He gives us so many things. The more we thank Him, the more He'll want to give us. The more you complain, a father is a father. Mother is a mother. Hashem is beyond human. So therefore, that's why we keep getting good things even when we don't say thank you. But the idea is part of the tefillah initiative is to realize that Shema Yisrael is not only Shmaka Leinu, and Bifo'enu, and Baruch Aleinu, and all those things that we need from Hashem, but Moedim is an integral part of saying thank you. I want to tell you a phenomenal story. This story was told to me by the person himself to whom it happened. His name is Hananya Chalak. Hananya Chalak runs one of the greatest organizations in Eretz Yisrael called Ezer Mitzion. Eidah Mitzian had 20 different offices all over Eretz Yisrael. They dispense medical advice, and they dispense medication, and they help poor people who can't afford medication. And they have the biggest bone marrow Jewish directory in the world. So a guy from a foreign country calls up Hananya. He says, listen, I've heard about your organization. I'd like to come and meet you. I want to help you out. He says, okay, when you come to Israel, give me a call. Meet the Yerushalayim office. Sure enough, he comes. They meet in the Yerushalayim office. It's late at night, and the guy gives a beautiful donation. Hananya says to him, you know, you don't get to Israel that often. Why don't we go to the Kaisel with Avmeyer tonight at the Kaisel? Something very special. He says, you know, you're right. Let's go to the Kaisel. So they come to the Kaisel. Those of you who have been there at night, it's the most gorgeous time to be there. The orange lights at night, bay, the whole plaza, it's so serene, it's so beautiful to daven at night. So it's quiet, and you can hear people davening. And as they're walking towards the wall itself, they hear this guy, he's davening and he's crying. And his hands are up to Shemayim, and they are just so taken by this guy. Now, watch this. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Hananya turns to this wealthy man who came from some country in Europe. And he says, look at that guy. We got to help him. Let's go over to him. Whatever he needs medically, I can help him. And whatever he needs financially, you can help him. What do you say? We go over to him. He says, you're right. Look at that guy. They go, they wait till he finishes, and they go over to him. Say, good evening. Good evening. We'd love to help you out. How's everything? Oh, everything's wonderful. Say, no, you don't know who I am. My name is Hanani Chalat. I run the biggest medical organization in Israel. Whatever you or your family need medically, I tell you, I never saw anybody down like you. I'll do anything for you. And if it's not medical what you need, financial, my friend here will help you. He says, no, everything is fine. What do you mean everything's fine? You're dying like the world is coming to an end. We want to help you. He said, look, you don't understand. Last night, my wife and I, we married off our youngest child, our 10th child. Tonight I came to the Kaisel to say thank you, Hashem. Imagine that. That's how a guy dies. He's coming to say thank you. That's part of what we have to begin to improve. To be so grateful for every day of life. Do I have to tell you, open up any Jewish newspaper, Rachmana Litzlan, how many young people are sitting Shiva? The Misha Berach list is endless with those people that are sick. If you have your health, and you have a job, you have a house, you have children and grandchildren, stop for a minute and say thank you, Tashem. That's part of making a connection. That's part of Maidim. Want to hear what it means making a connection? Listen to this, you won't believe it. It's one of my favorite stories. I'm telling you, you know, after the book came out, so I kept one book for myself, and I make a note of how many people comment on the stories. So this story, perhaps more than any other story in the book, one of the most popular stories. Listen to this. There's a guy in Eretz Yisrael, his name is Michal Goodfarb. Michal Goodfarb has not missed davening with a minyan in 30 years. You know what that means? Wherever he is in the world, he knows where there's a minyan. If he's in Chicago, he knows the Wi-Fi building where there's mincha. If he's in Milwaukee, he knows what doctor office is, they're having a minyan. Wherever he is, all over the world. So a couple of years ago, he comes home 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh my gosh. He comes home from a wedding, he realizes, oh my heavens, I didn't dial Myers. So if he didn't dial Myers, that means he didn't dial a minyan. Where in the world are you going to get a minyan 3 o'clock in the morning? So if you're in Flatbush, you go to Landau's, right? He's 7. And if you're in Borough Park, you go to Shabbos Shabbos. And if you're in Eretz Yisrael of Bnei Brak, you go to Iskowitz, it's on Rehov Rabbi Akiva. What are you going to do in Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim's also a place. Zichron Moshe. Come to Zichron Moshe, 24-7, there's always a minyan. He comes there, 3:15 a.m., he looks around, there's nobody there. Finally finds one guy in the room, says, excuse me, did you tell Meyer? He says, no. He says, do you think we're going to have a minyan? What, are you crazy? An hour and a half is Masikin. They're going to dive a chakra. It's finished. He said, well, I haven't missed a minyan in 30 years. He said, where are you going to get a minyan? Listen to what this guy thinks of. He calls an Israeli cab company. He says, send me 8 cabs, only Israeli drivers. Imagine an eye follow a guy like that. So the cab company says, 8 cabs? We got 8 cabs 3 o'clock in the morning. How many you got? 5. Send me 5. He calls another company. Says, how many? I need 3 cabs. Only Israeli drivers. 10 minutes later, 8 cabs come running up to Zichron Moshe. Everybody wants to know, where's the Bar Mitzvah? Where's the Chasna? What in the world are we doing here? Listen to what this guy says. He says, Rabotai, everyone start your meters. You know, like Indianapolis 500, start your engine. Everybody start your meters, come to shore. They don't know what he's talking about. All these guys come, some chilonim, some have to be giving yarmulkes, some are, you know, frum guys. He says, Rabotai, I haven't missed a minyan in 30 years. I don't care what it cost me. I'm going to pay every single one of you on the meter. We just got to have a meyer together. So some from guys, you know, they know what meyer was. But some chilonim, they didn't even know what meyer is. It took them 25 minutes to plow through meyer. At the end, he goes over to the first guy who came, a frum guy, says, how much do I owe you? The guy says, listen, I've been davening all my life. Never did I daven in such a holy minyan that a guy wants to pay 8 guys on a meter. I won't take a penny from you. So he goes to the other guy. The guy's a chiloni. He had to give him a yarmulke. He says, how much do I owe you? He says, sir, I haven't been in the synagogue in 7 years. I don't even go Yom Kippur. You brought me here tonight. I should pay you. Now you should pay me. And not one guy took a penny from him. Because they all saw that's what it means. That's what it means. When a person is sincere and making a connection, people understand. That's what Shiva is all about. You know, sometimes we daven. And we keep davening, and we don't get what we want. And it's very, very discouraging. I want to share with you a story that I once heard in Eretz Yisrael from somebody, I believe it was Rav Moshe Chodesh, who told me this story. He said that somebody once went to the Pnei Gezeirot. Now the punchline is in Yiddish, so I'm going to say it exactly in Yiddish. Most of you understand Yiddish, but of course I'll translate. Somebody went to the Pnei Gezeirot and he said, Ich daven zu der Eberstein, er empfet nicht. I'm davening to Hashem, and he's not answering. So the Pnei Gezeirot said, er empfet nicht. He's answering no. No is also an answer. Many times we think that if we don't get what we wanted, Hashem is not listening. Hashem is listening. He just said no. Just like when your son wanted the car, right? And you said, no, Dad, you're not listening. Of course I'm listening. I'm saying no, because I don't think you deserve it. Or I don't think it's safe. Or I don't think you should be going out there with your friends. You're not listening? Of course I'm listening. But no is also an answer. How many of us remember that incident that happened back in 1994 with Nachshon Waxman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, that young soldier, Nebach, that was taken? And those of you old enough to remember the whole world was davening for him, the Hamas, Yimach, Shemom, Vizachrom. They had kidnapped him. It was Friday afternoon in America. Nobody knew what was happening. Even in the White House, they were putting on pressure to try to get him released. And Rahman al-Litzlan, they killed him over Shabbos. And in Eretz Yisrael, they made the Levaya right away. So what his father of Yehuda said, that night will go down in history until Mashiach. He said, we all daven to Hashem. We daven to our Father in Heaven to save our dear son, Nachshon. But our father said no. And a father has the right to say no. Imagine somebody is able to say that at the hesped of his own child, that a father has a right to say no. You should never know from it. We should never know people that have to go through that, chas v'shalom. But no is also an answer. And so therefore a person shouldn't be broken if he's davening for something, because you never know what's best. We daven to Hashem and we ask and we think that if we get this job it's going to be the best thing ever. But then what happens? We wait 2 months later and we find something else. And that's the best thing that ever happened. How many times does it happen that a girl doesn't get accepted into the seminary she wants and she's crying? How am I going to get a shiva? I didn't get into the seminary. All my friends got in. What happens? She goes to the other seminary and she ends up marrying her best friend's brother. That's where the shidduch was, in the other seminary. So I brought two gifts for all of you tonight. Because I think as part of the tefillah initiative, we have to have something, remaisah, something in our hands that we can improve. So I want to tell you two great stories about two wonderful people. The first one is the Dr. Chaim Avitan. Dr. Chaim Avitan is a doctor, together with his two other brothers. He has a number of brothers. Three of them are medical men. And their father passed away. He was a Rav in Long Beach and Long Island. Talmud Chacham, I believe he had learned in the Parvish Yeshiva. And after Rabbi Moshe Avitan passed away, Chaim wanted to do something with Zecha Nishmas, his father. So I remember when I came to him in Achamovo, we were throwing out certain ideas. Nothing bothers him. Nothing caught his fancy. One day he calls me up, he says, you know, I was driving today on the highway and I came up with the idea. I said, what is it, Chaim? He said, I got it from your sister-in-law. I said, my sister-in-law? Now, I have a sister-in-law who passed away at the age of 52. She was waiting for a liver transplant. She was never not well, and she passed away. Chaim was her doctor, one of her doctors. And he told me that once in Mount Sinai, when he came into her room, he saw she was donning something. He said, what are you donning? She said, well, I'm about to take a pill. And there's a din in Shulchan Aruch that before you take a certain medication, any vitamin, any medical procedure, there's a certain yiratan that you're supposed to say. He said, I didn't know that. She said, look it up, you'll see. She was the daughter of Rav Osher Zimmerman. Rav Osher Zimmerman was a poysek. Obviously, he taught his children well. And sure enough, he looked it up and it was halacha. Today, that day when he called me, he remembered that. So he printed up literally thousands of these refuah cards. Every single one of you will be able to take one home, or as many as we have here tonight. If not, I'll send them to Frank and we'll give them out, make sure everybody can have them. Before you take the next vitamin, before you take that supplementary drug, before you get that next injection, any medical procedure, it's a b'feirusha din in Shulchan Aruch. You say this yehiratzai. Who here doesn't take vitamins? Who here doesn't take any medications? We're all on something. We should be on something, any of us, some of us anyway. But whatever it is, if we're on something and you want it to work, you say this tefillah. You can say it in Hebrew or in English. That which I'm doing should be for refuah. My mother used to say it with me all the time. She used to say it in Yiddish. I didn't even know that it was a din of Shulchan Aruch until Chaim showed it to me. You're the one who doesn't charge. Hashem doesn't charge for the medical advice. Every one of you should take one of these. Then I want to tell you another thing. There's a wonderful guy in the Syrian community in Brooklyn. He doesn't want I should mention his name. He once thought, you know, the Gemara that we spoke about before, that if you daven for other people, that you'll be answered first. So listen to this idea. It's so simple. How could we have not thought about it? He decides he's going to make a database. A database of tzaras and Klal Yisrael. And anyone who has any problem, you call that number. They will never, ever ask you your last name. So just get your name and your mother's name, and they'll hook you up with someone who has the same problem. You daven for them, they'll daven for you, and I am telling you, every single week I get emails of people whose doctor swore they'll never have children. Guys who they said will never get married. People who thought they'll be out of a job forever. They called this organization, Kol HaMitpalel, they gave them somebody to daven for, and miracles happen. Because Hashem sees that you care for others. And people say, it's Shemayla Shema, it's not for the true reason. No, but that's how you train yourself. Because when you daven for somebody else and you see that it works, of course you're going to continue davening. And so therefore, hopefully we have enough. And if not, again, we'll make sure that everybody has. You take one of these Kol HaMitpalel cards. And you go home tonight and you think about what you need in life. And call this organization and you'll daven for others. And then all of a sudden the tefillah will mean something. You're talking to Hashem about another individual that's trying to marry off a child, trying to have a child, trying to get a job, trying to make the marriage work. Such shrek lecha problems in Klal Yisrael. Any person that's involved with the tzibur knows that Klal Yisrael is afflicted with so many problems. And believe me, you look around this base medrash tonight, so many of us know each other. You think you know each other. And you say, that person, they have it all good. That's only because you don't know them. Because you don't know what's doing in their homes. Because they're able to camouflage it. They're able to hide it. We're all in gullus. We all have challenges. We all have issues. And that's why we need each other. That's why we have to daven for each other. That's the whole purpose of the Tefillah Initiative. So I just want to end with one more thing we'll review and end with a great story. The Gemara tells us something very interesting in Megillah Chof Tes Amid Aleph. The Gemara says, Asidin Bote Knesios, or Bote Nidrosha Sheva Bovel, Sheyikru Beretz Yisrael. All the shuls, B'nai Yeshurun, all the shuls all over throughout New Jersey and New York and California, all over the world. Eventually, all these shuls, when Mashiach comes, are all going to be part of the huge Beis HaMikdash that will be rebuilt. That's what the Marsha and Megillah Chavtet Amud Aleph tells us. La'asid yiyeh Beis HaMikdash, you know how big the Beis HaMikdash is going to be? It's going to be as big as the city of Yerushalayim itself. That's how big the Beis HaMikdash is going to be. Not only that, Yerushalayim, the city of Yerushalayim, Obama doesn't realize this tomorrow, he doesn't know the Mashal. But Yerushalayim is going to be as big as the whole Eretz Yisrael itself. What's the reason? Lafisha of Yerushalayim habnuya la'asid. The Yerushalayim that's going to be built la'asid, yiyeh chubra la'lamigdash yachtav kol mekoymeish shabotek nesiyah shahoyah ba'ilam azeh. Every shul that was ever created, somehow, miraculously, is going to be transformed to Yerushalayim and become part of the Beis HaMikdash. This is the Marsha and the Megillah Chavtes, Amar Aleph, if you could look it up. The Nimshad, it comes out then. Begolus, Ata, right now in Golus, She'ani Oimei, the Beis HaKnesses, when we are standing in this Beis HaKnesses, in Teaneck, New Jersey, Harehu Mokem HaMikdash Gufa de La'asid. That's part of the ultimate Beis HaMikdash. So when we say that a shul, whether it's in Deerfield Beach, or any place else, is a Mikdash Ma'at, it literally is a Mikdash Ma'at. It's part of the Beis HaMikdash, because all the shuls are going to be brought to Eretz Yisrael. And we're all going to be part of that Mikdash Ma'at. And that's why it's so important to have Derech Eretz, just like we would have Derech Eretz if we were in the Beis HaMikdash itself. This is a chelek of the future Beis HaMikdash. And maybe, if Hashem sees that we treat this Mokam Kodesh as a true Mikdash Ma'at, then we can be Zaycha. That will be Zaycha to see the ultimate Beis HaMikdash. And that's what the Pasuk tells us in Tehillim, Kuf Chav Beit Gimel, Yerushalayim Habnuya Ke'ir She'chubra La'yachtov. Yerushalayim, the built up Yerushalayim will be that city that's united together. What does it mean up to Yerushalmi Chagiga? That's what it means, chubra. Chubra doesn't only mean the shuls will be attached. We'll all be attached. Part of tefillah is to begin davening for other people. To begin caring for each other. Because we can't make it alone. We all need each other. We need each other in chizuk, and we need each other in tefillah. That's the essence of the tefillah initiative. To bring awareness that tefillah is not only connecting to Hashem, but connecting to each other. So let's review everything that we said, and we'll end with a great thought. Let's remember, Avodah Shebelev, Rachmana Liba Boy, Hashem wants heart. What is the service of the heart? Heve Oimezu Tefillah. What Abel Yishvei told us, in the name of Rav Aaron Cutler, that when you learn Torah, Hashem is talking to you. When you daven, you're talking to Hashem. That's why we need chizuk in tefillah. Why? That's what the Gemara in Brach Slamet Bey tells us. Because if we daven so many times a year, we're davening 1,000 Shemayin Esrahs a year. Anything that you do 1,000 times, you lose the interest, you lose the pizzazz, you lose the excitement. That's the purpose of getting together to talk about tefillah. So how are we going to improve? There's certain ways to improve before we even walk into the shul. We have to become that person that's mavir amidaisav. Looking away. If we look away at those that have hurt us, then Hashem will be willing to look away at some of the things that we have done. Next thing is to make sure that our mouth is a perfect implement. Don't curse. Don't say a dirty joke. Don't say words that are harmful to others, even to your child. Especially to a spouse, to a rav, to a co-worker, to anyone. Don't say words that are painful, because that makes the mouth an imperfect tool. And then how in the world could you build perfect malachim to take the words to Shemayim? So that's even before you come to the shul. Let's make sure at the end that come is not going to be the way we work from now on. When a tribe, when they say 7 o'clock is davening, we should be there 10 o'clock. 10 to 7. Not 10 o'clock. I meant 10 o'clock the night before. But we should be there 10-15 minutes before to put on talis and tefillin. So like this. I see here Mr. Pruszynski. I can't believe I haven't noticed him this whole time. Where's your wife with her hat? Oh, there she is. I knew she was wearing a hat. We had a trip like nobody else. We had a trip to Poland and to Lithuania that was out of this world. How many times did we cry together and talk about tefillah? So one of the things that Mr. Pruszynski and I spoke about when we were standing by the kever of the Ger Rebbe. The Ger Rebbe says, Hashkomas Beis HaMedrash Shachris V'Arvis. What does that mean? Hashkomas Beis HaMedrash, you get up, Shachris and Arvis. Shachris, you get up, what do you mean Arvis? Who sleeps before you get to Meir? Terech says, no, he said a great thing. You know what it means? If you go to sleep on time the night before, then you're going to get up for Shachris properly. That's what it means, Hashkomas Beis HaMedrash Shachris V'Arvis. You can't go to sleep 4 o'clock in the morning and expect to come on time to daven. You got to get the appropriate amount of sleep. That's what the Ger Rebbe said. Hashkomas Beis HaMedrash Shachris V'Arvis, at the end I come is not good enough. It has to be a dress code. No sneakers for anybody over 20. Obviously shut off your cell phones and beepers. Don't even text to show it's not appropriate. The only one who can have a cell phone on that's to show is either somebody's wife's expecting or else he's a doctor, Hatzalah, obviously. Personalize your tefillah. Talk to Hashem. That's what the Shlach HaKadosh is telling us. That's what the Rabbi Yehuda Chassid is talking about. And when you personalize your tefillah, it's a deep, you're having a dialogue, you're having a discussion with Hashem. Make sure you daven for others. Whatever you need, find that other people out there. Daven for them, and Hashem will answer you first. Take one of these cards, the Kol HaMispalel cards. Take the Refuah cards. Make it part of your life. Let's make sure that we begin to concentrate on Maidan, to say thank you every day for our jobs, our spouses, our children, our grandchildren. Of course you should daven for all the things that you don't have. And we're missing plenty of things. But let's not forget all the good that we do have. Let's remember how that fellow davened at the Kodesh are crying. Why? He came to say thank you. Let's remember, Chas v'Shalom, our tefillahs are not answered. We should not be broken. Baruch Goyze Mekayim, the Sekhlena Rebbe told us that Hashem sometimes makes a gzera, but it gives us the strength to exist through that difficult time. Sometimes we daven to the Eidish and the Emphatnish. That Emphatnish, no, is also an answer. That's what Yehuda Waxman taught us. The night of that terrible, terrible Leviathan that he had to speak at for never for his own son. And let's remember that we're davening in the Mikdash Ma'at. All the shuls, according to the Marshon, according to the Gemara Megillah Chafetz, all going to be part of the future based on Mikdash. That's why we have to be so careful how we act and how we speak and how we daven in every single Beis HaMedrash and Beis HaKnesses, because it really is a Mikdash Ma'at. So I just want to end with this beautiful thing. The Gemara tells us in Brachas, if somebody sees that he's davening to Hashem and it's not answering, the person shouldn't give up. He should daven, he should continue davening. It's a beautiful, poignant story that's told by one of the Talmidim of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was the preeminent Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. So he had Talmidim that lived in communist countries and they were trying to run away. Every night a few of the Talmidim would run away with their families to another country that was just about a mile away. They would go on this rickety boat and try to save their families. One night after this boat had made many, many trips, there was a father there with 2 children. And the boat was beginning to break up and people never were not prepared properly. They didn't have enough rafts on that boat. And as the boat is only a quarter of a mile away from shore, the boat is breaking up and the people find themselves in the water. And all of a sudden the father's trying desperately to swim that last quarter of a mile, but he's got 2 kids and it's impossible to swim holding 2 children. And he doesn't know what to do and he starts crying and he says to his children, my dear children, there's no way that I can carry both of you. We're all going to die and that doesn't make sense. I'm going to have to drop one of you. And the older child is crying. He says, Daddy, take the younger child. I'm older. It's okay. Maybe I'll be able to swim myself. Take the younger child. And the younger child says, no, Daddy, take the older child. He's the biggest tzaddik. He did so many more better things than me. Take him. And for whatever reason, the father, who's about to collapse and cannot swim anymore, for whatever reason, decides he's going to drop the younger child. And as he's about to drop the younger child, and the child feels that the father's grip is loosening, the child cries out, "Daddy, please, please don't drop me, please." And the father can't drop the child, and he picks up the child, and somehow he struggles, and he's able to make it to shore, and he faints, dropping both kids on dry land. And after he gets up, and he's revived, the younger child says, "Daddy, you saved my life." And he said, "I didn't save your life. You saved your life. I didn't have the strength to save you. But when you cried out to me the way you did, I just couldn't let you go. I said, you gave me a strength that I didn't even know that I had." And that's what the Gemara means. Sometimes we daven to Hashem, and Hashem doesn't kaviyachol have the strength to save us, because we don't have enough schusim. So what does the Gemara say? Don't give up. Daven again. That's why it says in the Pasuk, Kaveh el Hashem chazak v'yamech libecha v'kaveh el Hashem. Why does it say it the second time? Because when we daven that second time with feeling, kaviyach, we give Hashem the strength that he didn't even realize that he had. Because he didn't have the strength before, because we didn't have the schusim. But now that we daven again, Hashem gets that strength and he's able to save us. Let us give the OU a tremendous yashar koyach for taking the initiative to make this tefillah initiative something that's available for people across the country, so that we should become more aware of our connection to Hashem, more aware of our connection to each other, so we should be zeicha to be Klal Yisrael, be Akuda Achas, as one group, to be zeicha to see Mashiach in our time. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.